Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Bite Sized Blessings podcast. This time, I'm interviewing Yalo Davis. And I have to say, there is a little bit of a cheat. I was on his podcast in the past, so I did know him a little bit before this. But honestly, as we had our conversation, I was truly enthralled. Yalo has so much kindness, so much generosity of spirit, and so much wisdom to share with all of us. And I really just sat back and let him take the floor. What he had to say about the Chicago White Sox, and I don't know if all of you know, but after living overseas, I did grow up in the Chicagoland area, so two thumbs down for the Chicago White Sox even before what he had to tell me. Boo, Chicago White Sox. But I think it is a lesson in this story that Yalo shares. What does it look like to be good neighbors? What does it look like to be good friends? And what does it look like to be good stewards of the neighborhoods and communities that we are building? The story that he shares is heartbreaking, and really, I was ashamed that I was not aware of it before. They just break my heart. And so really, this podcast this week, yes, there are miracle stories, but it's about a community, a group of people who loved each other, a group of people who stood up for each other. And what happens when a big corporation, when a big sports team comes in and tells all those people they are no longer welcome? So now, without further ado, here's my episode and my conversation with Yalo Davis.
It was 100 years had passed, and it was time for them to work on the railroad tracks in Chicago. This was the old L, for some people who don't understand what that means. It's the old railroad tracks, the oldest ones in Chicago. And they were only allowing a specific group of white people to work on the railroad tracks. They were not allowing any blacks to work on that, or anybody else, Hispanic, it didn't matter who you were, to work on the railroad tracks. And we thought that that was very unfair. So I got called in by Minister Farrakhan. I sat at the round table with Minister Farrakhan, Tim Reed, we had Lou Rawls, and we had Jesse Jackson. So I was the youth leader for more than 1,700 young people that was in my age group at that time. I was about 17 years old when that happened.
As a human being, if you had to go to a party or a conference and you had to introduce yourself, how would you do that?
I like that question. That's actually pretty cool. So the way that I would introduce myself is I would introduce myself as a person who actually goes off of a person's vibe. I would introduce myself as a person who when I first see a person, I'm not judging them. I just wonder, what type of person am I meeting? Who am I meeting? And what type of situation am I getting myself into, if it's a good situation or a bad situation? I can't stand the prejudging thing. It drives me crazy. And without getting to know people. And those are the things that I would that's how I would actually introduce myself, besides being the person that actually does the podcast and poetry and being a published author and being a relationship coach. These things, besides those things, this is who I am.
And, I know you as Yala the poet. Now, how did you come about with that name?
Well, it's funny because when I was born, I was actually born at home. Literally born at home on the kitchen table. And my grandmother, she was actually standing there, had the midwife, my mom laying on the table. And as soon as I came out, my grandmother, she's Native American, full-blooded Cherokee. And she was like, yellow. That's the first thing she came out and said, yellow. And she wasn't talking about a color. She wasn't talking about anything that was associated with the color. She said she felt the vibe that I was going to be that man that walked in the spirit or with the spirit. And that's what it means.
That's actually fascinating. That's almost like a blessing or a benediction for, you know, when you exactly. were born.
Yeah, I agree.
What a huge gift to give you. Just what a huge blessing also, because I think, you know, I don't know if a lot of my listeners know a lot about indigenous cosmology or indigenous belief. I mean, of course, they're not all the same. Different peoples have different ideas about the universe and the cosmos and all of this, but irrespective of that, you know, what a powerful blessing to give you. And I mean, my gosh, have you ever thought to yourself, how do I live into this?
No, I just go with the flow. I'm a vibrational person. So I actually go off the vibe and I just go with the flow, and it usually leads me in the right direction. So far, so good.
So was your mother also Cherokee as well?
My mom was actually mixed Cherokee and African-American. Well, we say carbonated people. We don't say African-American.
Did you say carbonated people?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. And so did you, you know, this grandmother giving you this huge blessing when you were born, were you close to your grandparents then after that? Were they really involved in your life?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I could have all three of them here right now. Just the grandmothers. My grandfathers, I wasn't so close to. I really didn't have a relationship with them like that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love them. They did give me some insight, but just I didn't spend as much time with them as I did with my grandmothers. So it was on my mom's side, it was my great grandmother as well as my grandmother. And on my dad's side, it was my grandmother. So I got my great grandmother and my grandmother on my mom's side. They were the first to take care of me all the way up until I was 5 years old. Because my mom and dad were teenagers, so they really wasn't there in my life like that. And then at the age of five, all the way up until my young adulthood, it was my grandmother on my dad's side that took care of me the rest of the way. And sad to say, but when I did actually start living with my parents, it wasn't good. It was mental and verbal abuse and physical abuse.
I'm so sorry to hear that. That's, I always think like, I mean, look at how old I am, and I've never had kids. And even now today, I think to myself, I don't even know if even at this advanced ripe old age, if I would be a good parent. I mean, I think parenting is like one of the most challenging and hardest jobs ever on the planet. But when you're a teenager, you know, I can't even comprehend having the intelligence or the capacity to take care of a little human being and make sure that they're fed, they're safe, they're going to school, they're clean, whatever. I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm sorry you weren't raised forever by your grandparents. That sounded amazing. What are some of the things that your grandparents kind of taught you or modeled for you that you still kind of carry on as an adult?
One of the things that's really big is the caring and showing a lot of love, you know, just for people in general, not just for my family members or for my own children, but just for people in general, they definitely taught me that. My grandmother on my dad's side of the family, it's like everybody knew her, literally. Like the streets of sanitation, the firemen, the policemen, you name it, this is like everybody knew my grandmother. And it was mostly because of all the things that she did, like when the White Sox, because we were living on that land where the new Comiskey Park is, so we were living on that, we were raised on that land, and all those people that come through there when they would need a parking space, they would park in the lot next to my grandma's house, and my grandmother would make sure that nobody broke into their cars or make sure that none of their things were stolen. Nobody had any accidents, nothing. And it's like she just became well known for that, as well as when the guys came out for the streets of sanitation and they would be like pouring in sweat and looking like they were about to pass out. My grandmother gave them water, gave them sandwiches. Like she just did so much giving. And that's something that I still do to this day, because like, even though I was driving the school bus, I still would stop on the school bus, open a window, and give the homeless people something just so that they could go about their day.
I love that. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's, you know, I don't even know if adults know that the way they act in the world in front of kids, it just can change everything for a child. And, you know, whether you treat someone with kindness or with cruelty, or, you know, you grow up in a household that doesn't feel safe or that isn't safe. Mm-hmm. It doesn't just not feel safe. It also is not safe. And those things can shape us in ways that affect us for the rest of our lives.
Yes.
And so it speaks to me that you saw you know, your grandmother be so kind and so welcoming and kind of like this pillar of the community, almost like the mayor of the Comiskey Park area, mayor of Comiskey Park area. That's what it sounds like to me. And I mean, what an incredible role model, especially, you know, I don't know how old you were when they passed away. Were they around for quite a while?
They were around for quite a while. I was in my mid-20s. When my grandmother on my dad's side passed away, but I was still fairly young when my grandparents on my mom's side passed away. They didn't even let us go to the funeral because they felt like children shouldn't go to the funeral. And I wasn't comfortable with that. But I tell you one thing that did happen, and it was crazy at first, but once I started coming into the understanding, it became more of a blessing. Each one that passed away, like my great-grandmother passed away first, and then her daughter, which is my grandmother. My great-grandmother passed away. My great-grandmother literally came to me in my dream, and then I woke up in the middle of the night to run to the restroom. When I came back from the restroom, I sat on the bed for a moment, and to this day, I actually still do that. And I felt the pressure sitting right next to me of the bed going down, and I knew from the scent that it was my great-grandmother. And then when my grandmother passed away, the same thing happened. And then when my grandmother on my dad's side passed away, the same thing happened. So each one of them actually came to me after they left this plane.
Oh my goodness. And I was going to ask you, do you think that is because you all had such a deep abiding love for each other? Or was it, do you think also maybe it's because maybe you are a little open to those worlds, open to kind of that mysterious realm, that magical realm that people can't explain?
Well, I think that because the way that it was explained to me is when you do allow yourself to be open to the spiritual realm as well as the physical realm, you do allow yourself to be open to your ancestors actually coming to you, giving you messages, not only messages while they're like sitting right next to you, that spirit sitting right next to you, but also the subliminal messages that you give mentally. Sometimes we think that those messages are coming from some other higher power when sometimes those messages are actually coming from our ancestors. They've lived the lifestyle that you're living, and now they're trying to show you how to go on a different path where you're not messing up your life the way or making the same mistakes that they made.
I think it's important to learn from our mistakes, but also our ancestors' mistakes. And I mean, yeah. thank goodness, you know, there's help from everywhere, because Lord knows in this world right now, we could all use a little bit of help. It's a little intense out there right now.
It is.
A little intense. Well, I'm curious, did you grow up in a religious household? And like, how did that evolve for you over time?
It's funny because my great grandmother, she was not with the whole religious thing. Everything was all spiritual and Native American for her, because my great grandmother was actually Blackfoot, and her daughter was Cherokee. She was a full blooded Cherokee, but she also had a little bit of Blackfoot in her. And as far as the spirituality goes, we didn't do like going to church or any of those types of things. We just literally use nature, because even in the ancient scrolls, not so much the Bible, the ancient scrolls basically tells you that when you're looking to seek guidance, step out into the opening, which they call step outside, and allow yourself with open arms to reciprocate the messages that are coming from the elders and the ancients. So that's how we actually did it. But my grandmother on my dad's side of the family, she was Baptist. And so she tried to get me to go to church, but the vibe of going inside of her church, it just was not there for me, not at all. And then my dad tried to get me to go into all these different religious beliefs. Like, even to this day, he still has a religious belief, but it's not there for me. I'm not feeling like this is a place where I can actually find my sanctuary or serenity. I'm not able to do that. But one thing that I've always been taught too is to respect where people do find their serenity. And this is why so many things are out here, is because people find their serenity in different ways.
Thank goodness for that, because I just think diversity, and, you know, because one size doesn't fit all, and everybody's going to have different ways of like approaching that energy or that spirit or those ancestors. Everybody's going to have different like needs.
Yes.
I think it is a little unfortunate that there are these groups in the world that kind of want to impose their belief system on everyone else.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of devastating, because where I find God or where I find spirit or great creator is in the many different ways that human beings show up or how they operate in the world. As long as, you know, they're doing good works or they're creating beauty or they're trying to lift someone up. I mean, I find gorgeousness in the many different ways that God can show up in the world. And I think we as humans, we can be channels for God, you know, or great spirit. And that's how great spirit has their kind of like their effects known in the world, or shown in the world, is through human beings, which is, I think that's, we need more ways, not less. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly.
More, not less. So I would love for you to talk about your podcast. Like, what's it about and how did it come about?
So with my podcast, it's literally about the same thing that we were talking about, the diversity. It's about the diversity, and I've learned a lot of things in many different ways. When I first started out, my goal was to just to be able to give people advice and help other people out in whatever areas that they were struggling in. But then I started getting people that were like real estate, people in sales, and people in the healthcare industry, people who also study psychology like myself, people who were just entrepreneurs, and I was just like, okay, I'm not going to try to narrow this down to just one thing. I'm actually going to go with the flow and see where it actually leads me. And I'm super excited that now the podcast is in 18 countries and 3 continents. So I'm super excited about that. And I'm super excited about the very first lady. I can never forget her, Miss Shannon. And this is something that really touches my heart. She was a lady who had cancer. And after speaking with Miss Shannon, she actually went into remission and had been into remission ever since. And it was such a blessing because her husband had just passed like maybe a couple of months or so before. She actually helped me to understand how to utilize this platform to learn more about podcasting and everything. She was like literally there. And I felt so compelled and so excited to be able to give that energy back to her by helping her to see that there is a fight in her and she has a reason to be the fighter that she is. And to see that she went into remission, that was amazing. Amazing.
Well, that's, I mean, thank goodness. And what an incredible, I mean, we all need those people in our lives who lift us up to support us, because sometimes this life can be really confusing. And I don't know about you, but when I started podcasting, it took me like 26 hours to produce my first episode. Oh, wow. Just because I had no clue what I was doing. And I was using this platform, Audition, to like produce the podcast. And let me just tell you, it wasn't pretty. And so the fact, you know, and I didn't have anyone. So the fact that you had this kind of this champion next to you makes me happy, because yes, I sort of spared some of the pain that, yeah, I went through. So Miss Shannon, you're an angel. Thank you. Thank you.
Blessing.
Talked before. I was a guest on your podcast, and I really, you know, and also Chicago, you know, after I grew up overseas, I grew up outside of Chicago in a suburb. So you and I kind of have Illinois in common.
Yes.
Or as people who don't know, they say Illinois.
Yeah. You
know, silent people. The S is silent. But I mean, I think when you and I were talking before and having a conversation another time, you alluded to this, and forgive me if I got this wrong when I heard you, but didn't your family get displaced? Because yes. So I want to know more about that, because it kind of pisses me off.
Well, at this time, I was a teenager growing up in the household with my grandmother, and my cousins had just lost their place, and they were living with us as well as their mom. So when Comiskey Park had taken the land first, they asked us if everybody would just, you know, move into something else. And everybody's like, why would we do that when we've been here all of our lives? I mean, is there going to be some sort of compensation for it or anything? And it was like, no. So then it turned out that some of the people actually got paid to leave, but the rest of the people, they bought the land and forced the rest of us out. So we never got any type of compensation or anything for having to move so abruptly. Never. And it sucks.
Can we still sue someone for that? Because that is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Disgusting.
Yeah. And to this day, I'm never watched the White Sox for anything. Even when someone is praising, oh, the White Sox won, I'm like, okay, yeah, you could kept that to yourself, because I really don't want to hear that.
Yeah, well, I do have to admit that I am a Cubs fan, and I've always been a Cubs fan. And yes. So even before having this knowledge of what happened to your family, I would have said the White Sox could suck it. But now, after this and you telling me this, it's like they can triple suck it. Like, I, how disgusting and what privilege and entitlement to just think you could move in, displace all sorts of families and then not pay them for their land or their houses or what have you. I feel like, you know, first of all, Chicago is like so corrupt, but so is, I mean, so much in this world is so corrupt, but Illinois is corrupt. Chicago is like its own little special kind of corruption. It really and is. It's like, if you don't have the power and you don't have the friends, you're kind of SOL.
Yes.
And so I'm so sorry that happened to your family.
We lost a lot of our elders that we grew up in the neighborhood behind that. And one of my most fondest memories of that neighborhood was when we had the elders versus the youth. And it was an all day, all literally from the time we got up to the time it was time for everybody to go to bed. This was in the summertime. And it was the elders against the youth in every sport. And we literally played football, basketball. We played softball. We played regular baseball. We played kickball. We had so much fun the entire day. And the elders wanted to show us that they were not too old to get out there to do things and that we were not better than them. And I got to give it to them. A lot of those sports, they kicked our butts.
That's amazing. And that sounds so fun. And I do have to say, you know, when I went to seminary and started getting my Master's of Divinity, in one of the classes, we talked about privilege and colonialism and all of this stuff. And, you know, along with all of that comes a lot of societal and cultural ills like displacement or you, like, for example, you losing your houses and land or refugees, right? Displaced by war, all sorts of things. And I never considered that place when someone grows up, you know, in a house, in a neighborhood, in a town, in a state that place becomes a part of your identity. And it is absolutely a place that you use to define who you are in the world. And you kind of, you also take that place and your home with you when you leave home. Mm-hmm. And it's just this. And so losing your house, losing where you live, losing your land can be just psychologically and emotionally devastating for so many people, and can lead to a lot of depression, just sadness, sorrow, grief, feeling of incredible loss, feeling like you're not connected to the world anymore, because where are you going to go? How are you going to create a new home? How are you going to find somewhere to belong?
Yes.
Because in your neighborhoods, I'm sure everybody felt like they belonged to each other.
They did. Like
a big family. And so then that's just taken away by the White Sox.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Who suck, by the way.
We had a guy that came in our neighborhood. And I had just got a brand new bike. My grandmother had just bought me. And the guy was trying to take my bike. And he wasn't even from our neighborhood. And the elders, literally, I was riding down the street. And they saw, they was like, what is this boy doing? What is he doing? And they saw that I was trying to get away from the guy and his friends, because he had friends too. And they came out, and it was crazy because they came out with blazing. They came out with their guns like, yeah, you think you're going to take something from my? It was like, stop running from them. Stop running from them. And they came out and they surrounded them just as was the guys were trying to surround me. They got them out that neighborhood. I mean, no harm was done to them. Truthfully, no harm was done to them. But they told them guys if they ever come back in their neighborhood, they was going to shoot them. And we had one guy, he was from Vietnam. His name was Chief. He was also Native American too. And his name was Chief. And Chief did not play. If he tell you that he going to shoot you, trust and believe he's going to shoot you.
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, I guess, let me ask you, where did you all move to, or like what happened?
Oh my goodness. It was so scattered, and it took us, even some of us, it took us at least a good 6 or 7 years before we actually even found out where everyone was. It took a long time, and I got to give it to social media too, because social media also helped us to find other people, because we had no way. We had no way to really find out where everybody was. I mean, it was one of those moments to where you were in such a panic and such an uproar. It was just so daunting, and you had to hurry up and pack all of your stuff up and figure out where you were going to go and what you're going to do. Some people ended up staying in hotels. Some people ended up staying with other family members. And then some of the other people, like some of the elders, ended up passing away. Some of the young people ended up passing away. Some of the young people ended up having to go into neighborhoods where they had ops at and end up getting killed. So it was a lot. That was a whole lot.
I'm so sorry. I can't even imagine. I'm so sorry. Oh, have I mentioned that the White Sox suck?
Right? Yes, you have.
Okay, good.
Yes, you have.
That cannot be said enough.
It cannot, especially not by those of us who's feeling the vibe. And there's only one person, and I got a cousin. He's the only person that is still a White Sox fan to this day. And I'm like, you are out your mind. There's no way. There's no way.
I love that. Thank you. Good. He has obviously has horrific taste, but we won't talk about it.
Exactly. I totally agree.
Well, I would, you know, the main question of the podcast is, I would love to hear any story or stories. You've already shared one, but I ask people about magical or mysterious or even miraculous things that have happened in their life. I would love to hear whatever you have to share.
Wow, that's amazing, because another story that I have that was very heartwarming, and this was after the White Sox thing. We ended up staying in a different neighborhood, but we ended up coming back to the neighborhood for a rally due to the fact that it was 100 years had passed and it was time for them to work on the railroad tracks in Chicago. This was the old L, for some people who don't understand what that means. It's the old railroad tracks, the oldest ones in Chicago. And they were only allowing a specific group of white people to work on the railroad tracks. They were not allowing any Blacks to work on that, or anybody else, Hispanic, it didn't matter who you were, to work on the railroad tracks. And we thought that that was very unfair. So I got called in by Minister Farrakhan. I sat at the round table with Minister Farrakhan, Tim Reed, we had Lou Rawls, and we had Jesse Jackson. So I was the youth leader for more than 1,700 young people that was in my age group at that time. I was about 17 years old when that happened. And it was powerful. It was a real party out, because the first time that we went out there, a lot of our people ended up getting locked up. And Jesse Jackson went and bailed everybody out that got locked up. But we won. We won our fight, because our people, as well as the other nationalities of people, were also able to work on the railroad tracks. Then we find out that they were being still treated unfairly, because now the unfairness came with pay. They didn't want us to get paid the same thing as the white people that were working on the tracks getting paid. And we went and fought again for that. And I tell you, we won both of those battles. They finally backed down, and now all of the people for CTA, for the audience who doesn't know, Chicago Transit Authority, all those people who were in charge there are now gone. You have a mixed variety of people that's actually running CTA now. And I would say about two or three months after that project had ended. Well, the project didn't end. The project kept going, because people still ended up keeping their jobs with CTA even thereafter. So one of the people that had the job, I was on the public transit on my way downtown, and there was this young lady. She was on the train. on her way downtown, and she was telling the story about what happened and how she got a job with CTA because she wasn't able to get one there before. And she said, there was this guy, I couldn't see him because I was all the way in the back. I couldn't really get a look at his face, but he was saying some of the most powerful stuff. And we were able to, I was just ready. I was ready to follow him. And she was in tears because at this time her family was doing so bad that she needed that job in order to help her family to, you know, sustain their living quarters. So I guess on the, I look back when I was listening to her story and I walked to the back and I say, so there was a guy and you didn't, I said, did you ever find out his name? And she was like, yeah, he said his name was Yellow. And I was like, okay. I said, well, guess what? And like the girl was in tears because she was so happy about being able to take care of her family and help her family to get ahead. And I told her, I was like, I'm Yellow. And it brought me into tears and it's still touchy to today. It brought me into tears and it brought everybody, including the driver, into tears because of how much impact that had on so many different people. So many different people. It was beautiful.
I wish everybody could see your face, which they will on the YouTube channel, but you're just, you have the biggest smile. You've always had the biggest smile. When we met before, you had the biggest smile. And I think, you know, one of the things, your podcast is so powerful. And one of the reason it resonates with so many people is you just have this really generous presence. And I think you're also excited about meeting other people and meeting them where they're at and their stories and what they're going through and who they are. Your actual serious interest in them is very evident. And thank you to your grandparents, right? For all the beautiful gifts that they gave you. I was going to ask, does your name mean anything specific?
Yeah, that's what I was saying in the beginning, that it means one who walks with the spirit.
That's right. I'm so sorry. Well, I was going to ask, I mean, that's like a serious job to walk with the spirit. And also, by the way, can be like super stressful and not really fun. So have you ever, are you just like chill with your name and your job or?
I don't see the stressful portion of it. And I think the reason why I don't see the stressful portion of it is because not only am I always busy, but I'm always saying thank you for something. I'm always counting my blessings as they come. I mean, and I'm always embracing whatever negativity comes my way, because instead of looking at it as a bad thing or something to get me down, I actually dissect it and try to see what I can actually learn from it.
Thank you for that. Thank you. I wish more of us were like that in the world. Also, thank you for sharing that story. I mean, that is such a powerful an incredible story of just how one person or a group of people can change the reality for so many other human beings.
Yes.
And that, you know, it doesn't take, this was somewhat before social media, I'm going to guess.
It was actually right at the cusp, because the only thing that was out during that time was MySpace.
Okay. We don't talk about MySpace. But one of the things that I think is so important to understand is that this was a grassroots effort. Well, yes, you had Lou Rawls, you had Jesse Jackson, you had Minister Farrakhan, you had these big names, but it still was a grassroots effort to get everybody on board, to get everybody, you know, fighting for the same kind of social justice that, you know, people could actually work on the railroad, which I think is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Why wouldn't you want more people working on the railroad of every kind? But also the pay thing. I mean, the pay thing's been such an annoying deal. I mean, as women, women are paid less. People of color are paid less. It's like, so stupid. And it makes pisses me off because it doesn't make any sense. And it's just like, ugh. Totally disgusting. I mean, for me, it's like, oh, if you're doing the same job, you should get the same money. Like, it just makes sense to me. So I think it's important to acknowledge that this whole thing was done before really social media became this juggernaut that it is. And that it was a community and an area coming together to change the rules, the stupid rules, but to change the rules. And that, you know, at that time was no mean feat. And yes, hello, Miracle, for sure. I mean, you want to talk about changing the old boys of Chicago, like that gang of just old white privilege in Chicago, that is like moving a mountain. Mountain. And it's still around, by the way. This isn't like some sort of, oh, it's all in the past. No, no, it's still there.
Still there.
And so 100% what y'all did was a beyond a miracle. Just changing that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm grateful to have even just been a part of that and to actually see someone, because I actually saw two people that were affected by that in a positive way, being able to actually find a job, being able to work, and being able to, you know, help sustain the roof over their head and being able to get food and things of that nature. Like, nobody knows what that's like until you actually experience that. I mean, you can talk about homeless people. You can say all these negative things about homeless people. And take, for example, speaking of homeless people, when I was driving the school bus, one of the times that I gave a homeless person something, I was actually on the school bus with high schoolers, and I opened a window and just gave the homeless person what I was actually eating. Instead of me eating it, I gave it to the homeless person. So one of my students was like, why did you do that? You shouldn't have done that. You should have kept that. These people are scammers. I said, are they? And I said, so do you know this person? He's like, no, I don't know them, but they talk about this stuff on the news, on social media. I said, so just because they said it on social media or just because they said it on the news, then that's a fact about every single homeless person that you see. And he stopped for a moment and he was like, wow. He's like, I never really thought about it like that. I said, yeah. I said, sometimes you can feel the vibe of people if you just pay attention to your senses and your intuition. It'll tell you if you're dealing with somebody that is not being forthcoming. It'll tell you. And he was like, wow, because in my culture, we were taught that, and I haven't been using that at all. I said, well, it's time that you start, sir, so you can stop saying all of these obscene things that make no sense. And stop trying not to help people, because let me explain one other thing to you. I said, in society, for every good that you do, there may be some negative things that come your way, but those negative things don't have as much of an impact on you if you give back to society. That's the way nature works. It's a cycle. And he was like, wow. And when he got ready to graduate, the following few months later, the young man was in tears, giving me his story about how things was not so good in his home, which helped him to make the decisions that he was making. But then when I say what I said to him, it changed his life. And now to this day, he's actually doing very well.
You're like, well, that's not the culture on this bus. So get on over here into my culture.
Exactly.
This is the bus culture. Get on board.
Yes, indeed. And I always call my bus the care bus. And I told the children, if you don't care about anything, if you don't care about yourself, you don't care about the people next to you, the rest of the people on the bus, and you don't care to help keep the bus clean, then do me a favor, ask your parents to put you on a nasty bus and get you off of this bus, because anytime you're on this bus, it's all about the caring. We all care about one another. I care about your safety. I care about your lives. I would never let anything happen to you. And in return, all I ask you to do, stay in your seat, no profound language, and do not put your shoes on the seats.
Okay, I had to tell you that I didn't even know there was such a thing as a nasty bus. So thank you for letting me know about that. Just everybody listening, be aware. But I also love the idea that you had the care bus, and that just warms my heart and makes me so happy.
Thank you.
I am not surprised that you had the care bus, and it delights me and it makes me happy because, you know, God, again, we're talking about how to model being a good human being in the world. And there you are with your own care bus.
That's what I called it. And it was, I actually won two certificates and a trophy for literally having the cleanest bus in the region.
Of course you did.
Thank you so much.
Well, our time is sort of winding down a little bit here, but I also, you are just an incredible, incredible storyteller. You have so many powerful stories to share. I mean, not only about like supernatural events, like, you know, your grandparents sitting next to you after they had passed away on your bed, but about the miracle of creating real social change in the world and being there for other people who are being disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think it's good to know that miracles come in every shape and size, every form, every kind of vessel. You know, it's, and different miracles are miracles for different reasons for different people. Yes. So I would love to hear, if you'd like to share anything else, I'd love to hear it.
Well, the one other thing was actually where we had a group of people, and this was a project that I actually did on my own. I had a group of people in an apartment complex that I lived in, and a lot of people were complaining about obesity. So I decided to do something about it. I got up early in the morning with starting off with the children, and we actually did an exercise routine literally right in front of my house. I put the music out there. I had everything all just nice and set up. And I had a few children that actually committed to doing it. Next thing you know, it turned from the children doing it to some of the parents coming out and doing it. And then after the parents came out and did it, then now we started having a few people from the office come over and actually join us in doing it. And then I found out that the office manager is also one of my fraternity brothers.
I swear. Okay. Hello. Hello. Anybody, if you're looking for an angel on earth, yellow, right here, angel reporting for service.
Oh my goodness, you'd be surprised how many of my friends, my family, my coworkers, like everybody keeps saying, you must be an angel, you must be an angel. And I don't look at it that way. I just look at it as I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. That's how I see it.
Well, also I think it's important to understand that, for me at least, that this world is a mysterious place. I do believe that there are people on this planet, on Earth, that, you know, they might not be 100% angels, but they're absolutely here to do good works in the world and lift other people up. And that's kind of their mandate. And they either know that, or something in them, there's a soul knowing that they're here to lift this world up, to lift mm-hmm. other people in the world up. And it can be a really heavy burden, but it also can be punctuated by just moments of intense beauty and revelation. And I have to say, I do think you're one of those people. And, you know, we need more of you in this world. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I honestly was just thinking, like, when you're on that bus and you gave the sandwich to the homeless individual, you affected every single child on that bus, every single kid, and you created more angels that day. Yeah. And so I thought, oh my gosh, you're just like spreading it around. And it's like a good, it's like a good thing we need spread around. So thank you.
Yes, it's like a healthy virus.
That's right. Everyone, that's a wrap with my conversation with Yalo Davis. And I hope you understand, or I hope you could hear, the big smile that is on his face eternally, eternally in this life, and how that smile welcomes everyone and urges each and every one of us to be better human beings. I, for one, am grateful and will be grateful to the end of all time that the universe brought us together, because I know there's another angel in our midst that is really deeply working to make this world a more just, a more equitable, and a more beautiful place for everyone involved. To see just what this formidable human is doing in the world, please do click on the episode's show notes. You know, I was kind of sad that I don't live in Chicago anymore or don't live close to him, because I would be hanging out just to get a little bit of that sparkle, a little bit of that beautiful, gorgeous blessing dust that Yalo is spreading in the world. I kind of want him to sprinkle it over me. So yeah, please do check out what he's doing. It's really gorgeous stuff. Thanks to everyone who listens. I'm ever so grateful. Please, if you are listening for the first time, consider leaving a rating or writing a little review. You have no idea how much those ratings and reviews help other people find us. So thank you to all of you who have done so. I am ever so grateful. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request, and it's a big one this week. Be like Yalo. Okay, be an angel. And what does that mean? What does that mean in our world that is so challenging and heartbreaking and difficult? I mean, I think it means showing up in your life every day with the humdrum of it, and knowing that amidst the humdrum, there can be magic. There can be miracles. There can be things that sparkle and that you glimpse out of the corner of your eye. And that glimpse, that sparkle, that magic, it's there. It's eternal. It's everywhere all around us. And it's governing every single act that we do in this world. Just like Yalo giving that sandwich to someone who is houseless. Just like Yalo showing up and giving his words to that meeting that changed everything. These small acts that we think we do, these small acts that we think mean nothing, they can change universes. So be like Yalo and show up. Be like Yalo and know that what you have to contribute is important. And be like Yalo and be a blessing to the rest of the world.